The early church recognized the primacy of the Church of Rome and the Bishop of Rome. The Epistle of Clement to the Corinthians, 90-100 AD. We must first look at the case of the rebellion at the Church of Corinth in the first century. In approximately 90-100 AD, the church at Corinth consulted the Bishop of Rome, who was Pope Saint Clement, about serious disputes which were occurring in its church. Pope Clement was the third bishop of Rome after Peter. He was the fourth pope. The church at Corinth wrote to Clement and asked him to intercede with their problem, even though the apostle Saint John was still alive at the time and much closer to them in Ephesus. The fact that the church at Corinth went to faraway Rome about their internal problem shows us that papal primacy was recognized in the very first century. In response to their appeal, Pope Clement wrote his epistle to the Corinthians. This epistle is one of the most famous documents in the history of Christianity. In this epistle, which dates from 90-100 AD, the Pope clearly uses authoritative language to command the Corinthian Christians to be subject to their local pastors. Here are some quotes from his famous epistle. 1 Clement to the Corinthians, chapter 1, quote, "We feel that we have been somewhat tardy in turning our attention to the points respecting which you consulted us, and especially to that shameful and detestable sedition," end quote. 1 Clement, chapter 57, "Ye therefore who laid the foundations of this sedition, submit yourselves to the presbyters and receive correction so as to repent, bending the knees of your hearts. Learn to be subject, laying aside the proud and arrogant self-confidence of your tongue," end quote. 1 Clement, chapter 46, quote, "Your schism has subverted many, has discouraged many, has given rise to doubt in many," end quote. Notice the authoritative language which Pope Clement uses in rebuking those who caused the internal rebellion at the Church of Corinth. This shows us that from the very earliest years, in the very first century, the Church of Rome was recognized as the one with superior authority. It was recognized in this way precisely because its bishop was the successor to St. Peter's authority and his keys. In the following very interesting quote, we will hear from Eastern Orthodox scholar Nicholas Afanasieff. He was a professor of church history and canon law at the Orthodox Theological Institute in Paris. As an Eastern Orthodox theologian, he was not a Catholic and did not accept Catholic teaching on the papacy or the Bishop of Rome. But in an essay found in The Primacy of Peter, edited by John Meyendorf, pages 124-126, here is what this Eastern Orthodox scholar admitted about the Epistle of Clement to the Corinthians. Quote, "Let us turn to the facts. We know that the Church of Rome took over the position of church with priority at the end of the first century. That was about the time at which her star ascended into the firmament of history in its brightest splendor. Even as early as the Epistle to the Romans, Rome seems to have stood out among all the churches as very important. Paul bears witness that the faith of the Romans was proclaimed throughout the whole world, Romans 1:8. We have a document which gives us our earliest reliable evidence that the Church of Rome stood in an exceptional position of authority in this period. This is the Epistle of Clement of Rome. We know that Clement was president of the Roman Church. The epistle clearly shows that the Church of Rome was aware of the decisive weight in the Church of Corinth's eyes that must attach to its witness about the events in Corinth. So the Church of Rome, at the end of the first century, exhibits a marked sense of its own priority in point of witness about events in other churches. Note also that the Roman Church did not feel obliged to make a case to justify its authoritative pronouncements on what we should now call the internal concerns of other churches. There is nothing said about the grounds of this priority. Apparently Rome had no doubt that its priority would be accepted without argument." End quote. So, as we hear in this quote, even the Eastern Orthodox admit that the Epistle of Clement to the Corinthians shows that Rome clearly held the place of priority in the first century. And this undeniable priority of the Church of Rome is nothing other than the primacy which belongs to it as a result of its bishop being the successor of St. Peter. The next example we will look at brings us back to St. Ignatius of Antioch. St. Ignatius of Antioch on the primacy of the Church of Rome. We've already mentioned St. Ignatius of Antioch and the profound significance his letters hold among the most ancient Christian documents. So far, we have not covered what he had to say about the primacy of the Church of Rome. In his famous Epistle to the Romans, number 1, dated 110 AD, St. Ignatius of Antioch writes about the primacy of the Church of Rome among the churches. Quote, "Ignatius, which is called Theophorus, to the church which presides in the place of the region of the Romans, and which is worthy of God, worthy of honor, worthy of the highest happiness, worthy of praise, worthy of credit, worthy of being deemed holy, and which presides over love." End quote. St. Ignatius says twice that the Church of Rome presides. Again, I remind the listeners that Ignatius's letters are among the most ancient expressions of Christianity which we have outside of the Bible. And in them we just happen to see that the famous Bishop of Antioch ascribes to the Church of Rome a primacy, a presidency among the churches. Is it just a coincidence that in 110 AD we find a primacy ascribed to the church at Rome, where, as we already saw, the fathers tell us that St. Peter, the one upon whom the church was built, was in fact martyred? It's obviously not just a coincidence. It's also significant that the same language of presides, which Ignatius uses here about the Church of Rome, is used by Ignatius in his letter to the Magnesians 6:1 to explain how the bishop presides in the congregation. So the analogy can be drawn from the teaching of Ignatius. Just as the bishop presides over or has authority over the congregation, so too does the Church of Rome preside over or have authority over the other churches. Now it must be pointed out that members of the so-called Eastern Orthodox religion, who do not accept Catholic teaching on the papacy, but cannot ignore some of these facts, have tried to minimize the significance of this statement by Ignatius. The so-called Eastern Orthodox also study the early church fathers. They are also familiar with Ignatius's writing, so they know that they must at least acknowledge that the Church of Rome presided in some way. But they remove the significance of this presiding or this presidency, as it is sometimes translated. They grant that the Bishop of Rome did have a primacy or a presidency of honor, but they say that this primacy of honor was not one of authority or jurisdiction. Well, what does that mean anyway? They say that the Bishop of Rome held the first place among all the bishops. He was the first among equals, so that he could, for instance, lead people in making recommendations. But they say that he didn't have any authority over the other bishops or the universal church to command or decree anything. The fact of the matter is that such a position is illogical and meaningless. If what they say were true, what would such a primacy, such a presidency mean in practical terms? If you honestly think about it, the answer is that it would mean nothing of practical consequence. Anyone can make recommendations. A primacy or a presidency only has a real and practical meaning if it translates into some form of authority over that which it presides. Even if we look at the most minimal and innocuous examples of primacy which involve a presidency, this is always true. For instance, the place a moderator has in a debate. A moderator in a debate theoretically cannot influence the outcome of a debate by injecting his own views. He is just there to moderate. His presidency over the debate is about as minimal as presidency can be. That's why it frequently happens that debate moderators have personal beliefs which favor one debater. Their personal beliefs aren't supposed to influence the debate. But if one of the debaters does get out of line by taking too much time, the moderator can step in on his own authority and silence the debater. The point is that his position as one who presides over the debate as moderator, as minimal as that presidency is, has a practical significance which translates into an ability to rule on his own authority, regardless of whether the other debaters like it or agree with it. For one who presides or holds a primacy which involves presiding must always have a greater authority than the one presided over. If one who presides can never invoke his presidency to decree something by that authority, then his presidency / primacy is a fiction. So the point is that this idea of the so-called Eastern Orthodox, that the Bishop of Rome can have a presidency / primacy of honor without authority over the other bishops or local churches, is fictitious and illogical, and it would be meaningless in practical terms. Thus, Ignatius's statement that the Church of Rome presides is a proof of Catholic teaching on the papacy. The logical conclusion of Ignatius's statement is that the Church of Rome holds authority among the churches, for it presides precisely because it inherits the authority of the one who had the keys of the kingdom of heaven, an unfailing faith, and was entrusted with the entire flock of Christ. Now let's look at what the so-called Eastern Orthodox actually admit about St. Ignatius's statement. Here are more interesting words from Eastern Orthodox scholar Nicholas Afanasyev in The Primacy of Peter, pages 126 and following. Quote, "We find the first direct evidence about the priority of the Roman Church in the writings of Ignatius of Antioch. Speaking of the Church of Rome, Ignatius uses the phrase, which presides, in two passages. The Roman Church presides in love, that is, in the concord based on love between all the local churches. Ignatius pictured the local churches grouped, as it were, in a Eucharistic assembly, with every church in its special place and the Church of Rome in the chair, sitting in the first place. So, says Ignatius, the Church of Rome indeed has the priority in the whole company of churches united by concord. In his period, no other church laid claim to the role which belonged to the Church of Rome. It is enough to compare his epistle to the Church of Rome with other Ignatian epistles. One immediately feels the difference of the tone. In his other epistles, he teaches like a doctor, but when addressing Rome, he does not venture to give any advice at all. Every line in this epistle is charged with special deference to the church which presides in love." End quote. These are very interesting admissions by this non-Catholic scholar. They demonstrate once again the truth of Catholic teaching on the papacy and how it's reflected by the ancient writing of St. Ignatius of Antioch. Now it's important to address something. Some might ask why St. Ignatius didn't fully develop Catholic teaching on the papacy by expanding upon papal infallibility in the full scope of the jurisdiction of the Bishop of Rome. Some ask how come that wasn't declared in a more precise and complete way in many other statements of this period. It's important to understand that in the first few centuries, all of the implications of the dogmas which were revealed by Christ were not yet fully understood or articulated by all. Note, the core content of the dogmas was certainly revealed by Christ and was known by true believers, but it sometimes took centuries for everyone in the church to articulate and understand all of the truths which are entailed by those dogmas. For example, it's a dogma that Jesus Christ is God and man. This dogma has been revealed by Jesus Christ, and no one can be saved without believing in it. However, it took hundreds of years for the church to define that Jesus Christ has two natures. It took the church almost 700 years to define that Jesus Christ, as one divine person with two natures, has two wills, even though this flows logically from the incarnation and is part of the exact same truth that Jesus Christ is true God and true man. Papal jurisdiction and papal infallibility and all the prerogatives of the Bishop of Rome are part of the exact same truth that St. Ignatius remarks about, that the Church of Rome holds the primacy among the churches. They flow logically from and are part of the exact same truth that Jesus Christ made St. Peter the First Pope, gave him the keys of the kingdom of heaven and an unfailing faith, made him shepherd over his entire flock, and that the bishops of Rome succeed to that authority. But it took time for many to recognize all of the aspects of this revealed truth, just like it did with aspects of the Incarnation and the Trinity. It should be emphasized, however, that the more precise articulations or understandings of the same truth or dogma never advance a deeper understanding which would be different in some way. That would be heretical. These more precise articulations are, rather, more precise understandings of the exact same truth. As Vatican Council I and St. Vincent of Lerins said, quote, "Let the understanding, the knowledge, and the wisdom progress, but let it be solely in its own genus, namely in the same dogma, with the same sense, and the same understanding." End quote.